When I say North Loop, is that a phrase you understand? There are a lot of initiatives underway to get downtown development, quote, beyond the loop, but unless we all know what we're even talking about, it's going to be kind of an insidery thing. The North Loop is the series of highway arteries that wrap around downtown just south of the City Market and north of Truman Road. The loop forms a boundary around the Central Business District, and it probably gets you to and from downtown, but it also acts as kind of a moat for pedestrians that makes it hard to walk even a very short distance. Let's just say you want to get from the City Market to the downtown library. That's like 10 blocks or something. But if you've never thought to walk it, the harrowing prospect of crossing six lanes of highway on foot might be why. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about the loop because if we're going to reconcile the car-centric city we have been with the pedestrian-friendly town so many want us to be, we got to start there. My guests are Ron Acklepole of the Mid-America Regional Council, where they've conducted a study of the loop. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Gina.
And that terminology, beyond the loop, that's actually a website that emerged from that study.
And it's still up and running. It's beyondtheloopkc.com.
But so I guess you do see us as needing to get beyond the loop somehow.
Well, so this study was one that we did in cooperation with the City of Kansas City, Missouri, and the Missouri Department of Transportation. We kicked it off in 2017, and it was really triggered by what was happening with the Buck O'Neill Bridge.
Remind us what was happening.
Well, it's in bad, it's old, and it's in kind of bad repair. And the state of Missouri was concerned about how long they could keep maintaining it as is. They actually came out with a proposal to reconstruct it in place, and that would have required closing the bridge for about 2 years to traffic in both directions, just because of the way the bridge is designed. And then it would have cost about $50 million, and the community reacted pretty negatively to that idea. And so we worked with the city and MoDOT to look at other alternatives for the bridge, and also were really concerned about how those alternatives would fit in with the bigger picture of how the North Loop, which when we talked about the North Loop, we were really referring to I-70, really in its connections from downtown Kansas City, Kansas, over into downtown Kansas City, Missouri.
Matt Staub is here, too. He's the chair of Kansas City's Parking and Transportation Commission, as well as vice president of the River Market Community Association. Hi, Matt.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
So am I overstating the case that if we want to be the pedestrian-friendly city so many are talking about helping us to become, that we have to do something about the loop?
I don't think it's an overstatement. It's clearly a barrier, a perceived barrier, as well as a physical barrier. And if you think about the willingness to walk a few blocks and change that mindset when it actually takes a couple of blocks just to get across that massive trench that is the North Loop, it's a huge mental block, I think, for people.
That it is kind of a gaping hole in the pedestrian experience. We were just talking about bridges. And one time on this show, we talked about bridges. An artist working on some of the new bridges going across the loop described downtown as the hole in a guitar. And he was describing bridges as the strings that were going to go across it.
Yeah, and at some point, all those streets used to go through. Like, if you walk down Baltimore north from the Central Business District, you will just dead end into a frontage road, which is then a trench. And so if you think about that then with that beautiful metaphor, then we're playing several strings short.
So, Matt, it does seem like City Market, the neighborhood that you live in, and if I understand right, and advocate for, that would be a place where this would be especially fraught. You have this bustling community where there's a ton going on right now, and it's drawing exactly the kind of person who, on paper, is interested in living a car-free existence, an urban experience. But the neighborhood is completely hemmed in by the river on one side and then this big loop of highways on the other.
Absolutely. It is completely, just like the Central Business District has been strangled by the freeways, so has our neighborhoods in River Market and Columbus Park. It's tied us in and kind of prevented those natural synergies between the neighborhoods and those connections and and in a way that, especially now that it's popular, you could see much higher uses for that space than have been there in the past.
Could you say, I mean, on the one hand, strangled, sure. But could you also say, at least in the case of the City Market, and then looking to the other side of the loop at the crossroads, that being kind of islands, in a way, gave them an identity?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and it's one we've definitely experienced in the River Market because of that. It's sort of an unintended consequence of being so separated that we have our own little self-contained village. I much would rather come back to the, you know, 60 or 80 buildings that we lost and that natural connection, but you're right that in the past it has helped sustain that identity. I think that identity is now with us, and we don't risk losing it by helping connect each other.
When you say that the central business district has been strangled, could you say explain what you mean by that?
Simply because if you look at similar cities to ours, the size of the North Loop and how short of a span that is, it is so tight around downtown that the connectivity and the development outward is difficult, and it doesn't work very well because it's so constrained. The ramps are very close to each other, so it's a dangerous stretch of highway on most sides. So if you look at the development patterns along it, along each side of the loop, you see basically stuff that's been cleared out for parking, for what was then urban renewal, quote unquote, where basically we tore it down and hoped something better would come, and it hasn't. And so
when you say quote-unquote urban renewal, though, can you unpack that?
Sure. Well, it was a federal program back in the day, in the 50s, where they would take these blighted areas and just clear them out. And these blighted buildings were some of the buildings that we find most dear today, like old brick warehouses. And back then it was, this is, you know, anti-modernity. We need to get rid of this stuff and move on. Often there were some racial overtones to that. So where we put highways and where we tore down buildings was all about, we're going to create a city for another generation, but really we just killed it for a generation.
Caitlin Eckerd is a historian. She's with us from the Jackson County Historical Society. She's the executive director there. And Caitlin, give us some of the background. How did the loop come to be?
Well, it really began, obviously, with Eisenhower's Highway Act in 56. And that's really what engaged the city, and that started the I-70, I-35 construction.
What do you know about how downtown just either physically or just as a community appeared at that time before this?
Well, downtown Kansas City, I mean, that was where we started in 1850, 1853, whichever date you would like to use. There was a huge boom in the 1880s. So there was a ton of people working, living, and playing downtown way before the highway system was enacted. And then you have we had the streetcar system, and that went all the way out to Olathe, to Independence, downtown. And then you see the rise of the car culture in the 50s. So it was very vibrant downtown.
And so then Eisenhower comes along.
Yes. The Highway Act to him was a way to connect all the cities. And it did do some good. Yes, we had some things ripped out with I-70 and I-35. But you have to kind of realize what else was going on at that time. We also had a lot of people, especially in this part of the city, they were going to Johnson County, to the suburbs. They were going south. They were moving out of the downtown area because they wanted a yard and they wanted a new build and all these things after the war that were a possibility.
So what actually changed physically to make that highway construction possible in what was already a vibrant downtown, which is usually, I would equate that with density?
Right. So I-70 was essentially constructed on 6th Street from what I've looked at and the maps and things. So the street system was already there. They were just expanding it into these multi-lane highways. And then with the downtown loop, that all kind of, you know, you had 24, 40, I-69, 169, all of those were there. And then you had 670 come on later, I-35 and I-70 in the 50s and 60s. So it really, those two decades really changed everything.
Did downtown develop kind of in tandem with the loop? As in, when you look at how the business climate has been or the general interest in downtown as a place to spend time, as all of that has ebbed and flowed, does that seem to be mirrored in changes in transportation infrastructure?
Like I said, downtown was already developed by the time the Northern Loop was established. And honestly, after that, you kind of see a big decline in downtown. You see people moving out, like I said, you see businesses going away. So really, I don't want to say the highway caused the decline of downtown, but people weren't going down there to shop anymore. They weren't going down there to see, you know, movies or plays or things like that. That was all available to them in the suburbs.
It's funny because as I was growing up in Kansas City, long after this happened, but I always thought of the highways as the way to get downtown. But as you're talking right now, I'm starting to hear the highways as the way to leave downtown.
And when they established the loop, that was their main purpose, was so travelers could easily bypass the downtown traffic if they were just passing through. Or if you worked in downtown, you could easily get downtown with the multitude of exits there are on I-70.
Ron Acklepool, jump in here. I mean, how do you see this?
Well, I think you're onto something. I think that the loop and the idea of connecting downtown to the interstate highway system was a pretty big idea for economic development in the region at the time. The interstate system was an idea. The downtown loop, I understand, was actually constructed ahead of the interstate program. So the city and the county, I think, constructed those. They also constructed the Broadway Bridge at the time. The idea, I think, was interstates are going to connect the metropolitan areas together, and most of the economic activity in the city and in the region was focused downtown, so it was really important to connect that into that system. But I think the unintended consequence was that it also made it easier to get in and out of downtown, and combined with other kind of federal policies around funding for housing, there are a lot of other programs that really facilitated the development of the suburban culture we saw. And one of the impacts of that was you saw the downtown area lose its retail base over time, lose its population over time. We're seeing that come back, at least the population growth in the downtown area.
So this is what I want to talk to you about. As the will to have downtown be a different way, it seems like it's almost where there's a will, there's a way. Like the infrastructure is built in some ways, just correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks to me like downtown is built for this existence we had for a long time where it was a place to go from 9 to 5. And then you were going to leave fast. And now downtown is becoming this other thing. People want to experience downtown in this other way. Yeah. And the infrastructure is still working in that way of like, get people downtown quick, get them away from downtown quick. Also, get from metropolitan area to metropolitan area, do it quick. That's all awesome. But when people are trying to experience downtown as pedestrians and just...
Well, I would say that... there's been a lot of focus on the city's part since the 90s, really, at kind of bringing back downtown as a vibrant center. Some of the bigger capital improvements that you've seen in the region, for transportation at least, the streetcar system that's back now, that's really not designed to get people to and from places far away right now. It's a way of better connecting pedestrian activity through the downtown area.
Right. That's sort of interesting in that it seems like that is, for a pedestrian, a logical way right now to go from City Market to Central Business District to the Crossroads.
Yeah. No, that's true. The back on the study that we did, some of the ideas that we looked at, and this study was kind of unique in that it didn't settle the question of what to do once and for all for the North Loop, but it identified options that I think the city and the state and Mark can look at over time. There are ways to fix some of the kind of problems that Matt talked about, the interchanges that are really close together all the way through the loop. There are ways to fix that. There are ways to...
Like what?
Well, frankly, there's probably more access points, especially on the I-70 section of the loop than you would design with a modern highway system. So closing some of them and consolidating some of the access onto more of a... Broadway or a boulevard kind of system on north and south of the highway was pretty important to all of the alternatives that we developed. We also looked at three different ways of kind of consolidating the footprint of the interstate lanes and either moving them north or south in the existing right of way to free up land that could be repurposed for other things, including potentially new development through there.
It seems like moving a highway would be really hard.
Oh, these are all expensive, right? and then the probably the most radical idea that we developed was removing I-70 as an interstate through downtown, replacing it with a boulevard. And that would probably provide the most opportunity to do the kind of pedestrian reconnection across the North Loop. We also looked at a number of options for the Route 9 corridor.
Can you explain to me real quick, why is that so radical?
We haven't done it here in the Kansas City area. There are other places that are looking at the freeway systems through their downtown areas. Denver's looked at it. Dallas has done a little bit of work with the Clyde Warren Park, which was a bridge that spanned a highway that connected or disconnected two parts of their downtown area. We really haven't done that here in the Kansas City area. It would be removing an interstate designation is a pretty challenging political thing to do, but it's one that's on the table as a result of this study.
Matt, jump in here. Are there things that you and people you talk to float as possibilities, as ideas that haven't come up yet?
I think the idea of caps or somehow remediating the interstate is interesting. But the way I think a lot of people talk about that is it actually adds additional liability. It's more infrastructure. And no doubt, as Ron said, this is really expensive to do these sorts of remediation, but so is having an interstate highway, right? I think that's why MoDOT is so receptive to the idea of closure, because that's a lot of infrastructure they wouldn't have to maintain. And that takes 32 acres that were a liability and turns them into a potential asset in the city's most valuable neighborhoods, right? So
what's interesting, though, is, I mean, these highways are not going unused. They're fairly congested a lot of the time. As Ron was saying, the political case, making the case that we're going to take some of these lanes away or something like that seems like a hard sell.
It's super daunting. Yeah, absolutely. And these are popular routes. The key point that I always look at is that they don't work well for anyone right now. If we remove additional ramps, which I think is necessary, then it serves downtown even less directly. It's more of a pass-through. So why are we running through our most valuable real estate with that pass-through? And the idea that these systems are fluid, traffic flows kind of like water, especially in the modern GPS era where there's another route, there's 20 new routes. So actually aggregate demand on the infrastructure goes down, as has been seen in other projects. So there's definitely ways for that to work. And it's also a 50-year investment. So we know things are going to be a lot different in the future.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And we're talking about the highway loop that circles around downtown. If you have questions about the loop and its history or ideas about how we can get beyond it, call 816-235-2888. 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about the loop downtown forming the unofficial boundary around our downtown, or at least the central business district. My guests are Caitlin Eckert of the Jackson County Historical Society, Ron Acklepool of the Mid-America Regional Council, and Matt Staub. He is an all-around infrastructure nerd who chairs the city's...
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm saying that because I think on some level all of us are, but I referenced that with you in particular because you are part of this like world of people who talk a lot about infrastructure, not just in your work, but like it seems like kind of for fun.
Yeah, I think so. It comes all from love of cities and the experiences they provide, I think, that make you realize that the infrastructure is a big part of that. And then you have a passion for the infrastructure, not necessarily for the sake of it, hopefully. But I accept your characterization.
I bring that up because I'd like you to full-on nerd out about the loop right now. Anything we've left out, if you're really doing that. If you're really, you're sitting with some friends over a beer, talking infrastructure like you do, and you're talking about the loop, and you're venting about it. What are you saying?
Oh, wow. What an opportunity. Well, I think there's some themes that we've touched on here, and Ron obviously understands this, and his comments alluded to how political this is. And I think there's something for everyone in this project. It was what makes it exciting. It is
the project of getting beyond the loop.
Beyond, exactly. So if you think about the connectivity today, the biggest detractors of this probably are commuters that rely on that infrastructure every day. And they know, and anyone can correct me on this, if you're someone that uses I-70, it doesn't work very well. It's very dangerous. The incident of crashes is much higher. The connectivity is terrible. And it just shoves people through urban neighborhoods. They don't want to be driving through my neighborhoods, and I don't want them to be either. So the idea that we could reconnect the West Loop, I-35, right onto a bridge. We don't have to make people come up through urban intersections. We can reconnect pedestrian corridors. We can make the streetcar work better. And we can reclaim 32 acres of developable land, which could be a big tenant, like a headquarters. Think of any other city in America that could offer 32 acres of land to a tenant that's not in the suburbs, that's in its most valuable place with existing infrastructure, where that's all upside for our metro's economy. That's a huge opportunity. So I just see in this challenge tremendous opportunities all around, and something I think everybody can win from, really, if we do it right.
Tell me about the standpoint of someone who lives in the city market. What does the loop mean to that person? I spent a lot of time in the city market in the mid-90s when there were a lot of empty storefronts. Not 100%, but more empty, if my memory serves, than active. Not a lot of foot traffic and not a lot of places to get basic, just day-to-day things you needed. So I remember trying to walk across that highway loop to go to the gas station to just, I don't even remember what I needed, but something just dumb. One of those dumb things you need, mm-hmm. where you go to a convenience store and you go get it. And I will never do that again. That was terrifying.
Yeah, so that's definitely changing because there's some population density in the neighborhood itself. But the neighborhood should have always been an amenity for the entire greater neighborhood and for the region. And the infrastructure kind of strangling us at all sides has made that less effective. Streetcar has helped us with that because now we are an easy connection. But aside from just the barriers aspect of it, there's also just the quality of life aspects. If you think about putting that many cars through your neighborhood, the air quality impacts, the noise, there are literal walls at the end of our streets.
The noise is a big deal. We have a listener who sent us this tweet, remove North Loop and cap South Loop. The noise on I-70 is so loud. The trench just creates an echo chamber for the noise, and the traffic during the rush hours makes it almost impossible to be a pedestrian. That part of it we've covered, but talk to me about the noise, Ron. Is that something that people talk to you a lot when you were doing this study?
We didn't hear a lot about, I mean, people did mention it in public meetings, but it was not it wasn't an overriding concern, but it is an issue that I think if and when we do look at these potential changes to the loop, that's going to be a question that we'll need to resolve in more detail. Typically, that's done in a kind of an environmental study phase rather than early planning phase, but it's an issue that affects the quality of life around it, and it would be something that we'd need to look at.
Do you think that one day, if this all changes, we'll hear that old-timey car honking sound, sort of like we hear that old-timey train going by in the bottoms?
I'm not sure about that.
Wax nostalgic. So, Caitlin, from a historical perspective, what is the bigger story that you hear as you step back from this? And does it contain any kind of a cautionary tale as we think about what changes we might make?
I think it's interesting to look at what else was happening in the 50s, especially in this area. Johnson County's population doubled in the 50s and it quadrupled in the 60s. And as a result of that, you had the rise of the car culture, the decline of the streetcar, because everybody was buying their Buicks. and everybody was driving to work. They lost that public transit in the late 50s. And you also had, you know, white flight. You had people moving out of downtown, out of the suburbs. And then when you go later on, urban renewal, which I don't know if it helped anybody. It tore out a lot of neighborhoods, a lot of historic neighborhoods. And I-70 did tear out some historic historic neighborhoods, some other things like that. Most importantly, what I found interesting was Kersey Coates Drive. If you are on I-35 on the west side. I'm trying to get my directions.
Yep. Yeah.
And you look to your right and you see a staircase to nowhere. That was a staircase that led from Case Park. And you can still see it between exits 2W and 2X if mm-hmm. you are driving around there today. And that was something that was taken out because of the highway. And a lot of houses from Quality Hill, which is one of the, not first, but one of the first affluent neighborhoods in downtown KC.
So the staircase to nowhere was once a staircase to somewhere.
To a park, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Matt, as a person who lives downtown once again, just what is your observation on that level of the cautionary tale you might take with you from these historic moments where everybody had a great idea? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. This is it's a great question, and it's one I've struggled with because I consider myself very progressive when it comes to how do we take our city to the next level and provide a better place for a quality of life for the next generation. And I wonder if I was a city leader in the 50s, if I would have been gung-ho to build interstates because it's the future and we need to retrofit our city for the future. So there's a cautionary tale for sure to consider the unintended consequences of what are we losing and what's our heritage and what's not in fashion today may be in fashion for the future and what the city doesn't belong to us, right? It belongs to the generations before and after us as well.
I think it's a really important point to just remember when you plan these big infrastructure projects that are going to have a long lifespan, 50, 60, 100 years, there was a lot of excitement back in the 40s and 50s about the potential economic benefits of the automobile. It was a really employed a lot of people, a lot of demand for it,
and the quality of life
and the quality of life that it
existence.
Yeah. There was a lot that was idealized about that. I would say right now one of the things that we paid a little bit of attention to and probably would still need to do more work on is thinking a little bit about what would happen with this kind of infrastructure if driverless cars, autonomous right. vehicles, which the buzz about them is a little less this year than it was when we were doing the study. But I think it's over a long term, it's something we needed to consider. I will say that the kind of modeling we did showed that actually, that kind of technology could make a scenario where you change the North Loop probably more viable than if it doesn't happen.
Let's talk to a caller. We've got Aaron calling us from Gardner, Kansas at 816-235-2888. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I listen to your show every day, Gina, because I drive a truck.
Oh, cool.
I grew up on the west side of Kansas City, 16th and Bellevue, and I see they're rebuilding I-70 over the Call River. You know, we're spending millions of dollars, so why would you want to do away with I-70? I grew up, like I say, back in the late 40s and 50s, and the boom downtown was booming, you know. We used to walk from the west side downtown to work, you know, and I drive a truck. I still drive a truck, and I take I-70 because 35 down to 670 is just packed, you know. So it's a lot easier to go that other way. And the reason they have more wrecks is because people won't slow down, you know?
So what is your thought about the loop and the role that it plays in all of this? I mean, it sounds like maybe you value it a little bit more than we have been in this conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, it serves a purpose, you know? I mean, why spend all the money rebuilding I-70 over Call River if you're going to close that down there, you know?
What do you think about the way the pedestrian experience has changed as someone who grew up at 16th and Bellevue? And
I walked all over downtown, even threw a paper route down there in the River Key area, you know, walked. And people get, you know, like the guy who got killed the other day walking across I-70. We got bridges. Why don't you walk over the bridge?
You know, Aaron, so it sounds like you don't see the loop as interfering with that pedestrian experience. You can just go over a bridge.
No, I don't. And the reason there's not much goes on downtown at night is because everybody moved to the suburbs, you know. You go down there in the daytime, though, and it's packed. We drove through there, me and my wife drove through there Sunday, and there was just people walking all over the place, you know.
Well, Aaron, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
It sounds like a trucker sees this very differently. Ron, when you did your study, is this a perspective that you heard as well?
Oh, yeah. I think that the project he's talking about right now, KDOT, is rebuilding the bridge on the Lewis and Clark Viaduct over the Kansas River. And KDOT did a similar study looking at that facility. What they're doing right now is just replacing the bridge in kind, sort of like what MoDOT had suggested might happen with the Broadway or Buck O'Neill Bridge. But yeah, there are industrial areas to the west of downtown Kansas City, Missouri that use the interstate highway and are located there largely to because of the access to the interstate. And that's a consideration that I think will have to be weighed really carefully as we're looking at what to do with the loop in the future.
I am surprised that you didn't hear more about the noise, and I wonder if it's because we're all so used to it.
That could be. I mean, it's people get used to things the way they are, especially infrastructure that doesn't change really rapidly. When it does change, people notice it. But in the case of the downtown loop, a lot more folks are probably noticing it now because they're moving back in. There was not a high residential population in downtown even 10 years ago.
When you think about how other cities do this, is the downtown loop a common thing, or is Kansas City sort of weird?
No, there are loops in other cities. Kansas City's is particularly tight, I'd say. I think that a lot of other places have a similar kind of idea of a loop around the central business district, but it's not the same size as ours. Ours is if you look on a aerial map, the area inside the downtown loop, and then you go out west, say, to the Village West and where the racetrack is built, that's about the same size area. But it's a pretty constrained environment with the interstate band around it.
The walking experience piece of it, is that something that people have been talking about for a long time, or is that really new in your experience working with infrastructure and transportation in this region?
I think, yeah, over the last couple of decades, I think the issue of pedestrian transportation, active transportation, bicycling has really risen as an issue. We invested a lot through the interstate era, building highways. There was a period of time in the 70s and 80s where a lot of new residential development went in without sidewalks as part of the routine, constructing the neighborhoods. And we're seeing less of that now. I think new development all has sidewalks. There's
Isn't it funny that we say that, like, it has sidewalks?
a lot of new development really considers trails as an amenity, and you see a lot of that in Johnson County. We're seeing more of that in the Kansas City area. There's just a lot more emphasis on active transportation, all the health benefits and the quality of life benefits that it can provide. And there are also economic benefits that can come from it, too, as you're seeing in downtown with the streetcar and the revived pedestrian activity there.
And in a world with affordable housing as a challenge, think about an average person spending 30% of their income on transportation, how much more that could give to their quality of life if they had other transportation options and we didn't require car ownership as a basically means to participate in our economy.
Short of the solutions, Ron, that you have put forward, although you identified one of them as being the most radical, which would be removing the highway loop altogether, are there less radical, small adjustments that are being discussed in the meantime?
I think that out of this study, the initial activities really focused on the Buck O'Neill Bridge. That's a project that MoDOT and Kansas City are currently doing an environmental study on. One of the key things about a new bridge there would be improving the pedestrian access over the Missouri River on that location. I think that's kind of where the action is right now in the planning out of this Beyond the Loop study. Hopefully we can arrive at a solution that'll fund that new project fairly soon and be able to move on to looking at other elements in the study.
I am interested to learn that the official definition of downtown is not what is contained within the loop, which in the world of journalism, that's always been my guiding instruction, is it's called downtown if it's inside the loop.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's 31st Street to the river, right?
Kansas City, Missouri, the planning department is doing an update to the greater downtown area plan right now. That's the definition that they use for the for downtown.
Caitlin, is that interesting to you as someone who looks at the history of our city and our county?
This was really interesting for me to research because I didn't know, like, I knew some, I didn't know a whole lot. But also, growing up here my whole life, I live in Johnson County and I work in Independence. So I drive through downtown every single day. So, it's interesting to see where we've gone and where we're coming, where we're going. I love the streetcar. I think it's awesome. We used to have one that went all over the city on both sides of the state line. So,
well, Caitlin Eckerd, Matt Staub, Ron Acklepool, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You can keep talking about the highway loop around downtown, its unintended consequences, and how we can maybe see a different kind of future on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Up next, an artist with deep ties to the Lawrence art scene is headed off to Kuala Lumpur with her young daughter. Hear why in just a minute on KCUR Central Standard. This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. My next guest is Molly Murphy. She's an artist I've known and followed for coming up on two decades now. She's from Douglas County, spent some time here in Kansas City, then took what she saw percolating in the crossroads in the early 2000s back with her to Lawrence. She's gotten gallery spaces up and running and coffee shops along Mass Street. She promoted the heck out of shows and artists, and as a result, art has a different kind of presence in Lawrence than it did before she rolled up her sleeves and got to work. Well, Molly is leaving soon, just temporarily, for an international artist residency. She's going to make art in Kuala Lumpur, and so we thought we'd take the opportunity to hear her story. Hi, Molly.
Hi, Gina. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, too. I want to be clear, you're not leaving. You'll be back.
We will be back, for sure. Lawrence is my home, but we are going to go for a month, the end of the summer, for a residency just outside of Kuala Lumpur.
And we is you and your young daughter?
Me and my young daughter. It's a little intimidating to think about the flight with a 3.5-year-old, but other than that, I'm very excited.
What are you going to be doing in Kuala Lumpur?
I'm going to spend 1 month at the Rimbun Dahan Artist Residency. It's an international residency primarily for Southeast Asian artists, and they bring in other artists throughout the year. And I'm going to continue a series of work that I've been loosely working on for about 3 or 4 years here. But as I change environments and space, I think that the work itself will form a little bit more on our experience there.
I referenced your backstory, and of course, it is my interpretation of your backstory. I definitely suspect.
I feel like it was very generous.
I suspect you're too modest to either believe or certainly say that you changed the art scene in Lawrence, but it is my impression that you did change things.
I would not say that myself, but I've always had an interest in being involved in my community. I participate with Artist Inc. as a facilitator now, and I'm interested in just giving artists an opportunity to sustain themselves in this community and remain in Lawrence. That's always been a struggle, to keep artists working here after they leave KU or for whatever reason they've come to Lawrence. And so it's always been, you know, self-serving as well, that I need this for myself and for my daughter to have all these cultural resources here that I value.
Cultural resources like what?
I served 2 terms on the board of directors at the Lawrence Art Center. And it's the kind of center that most towns our size plan for years and strive to have, and we have that here. And so the strength of institutions like that and community availability of the arts is incredibly important to me. making it available to all people regardless of ability or resources is incredibly important.
Tell me about your childhood. You have deep roots there. You grew up in Douglas County.
I did, just to the south of Lawrence between Baldwin and Vinland. I grew up out in the country with four younger brothers. My mom is an artist, and so our childhood was spent hanging out outside, making and creating. We always had art supplies. Now that I'm a mother, I'm not sure how much we were invited into her studio or if we overtook it. But there was always this availability of creation, which children naturally have the urge to do. And screen time obviously wasn't even a word or a thing. And so my childhood was spent exploring the outdoors and connecting with nature, as well as creating art and observing life through the lens of creation.
And your dad, he worked as a judge there in Douglas County.
He was an attorney for a long time and then worked as a district court judge.
It seems like the sense of rootedness in place, that just amplifies it in a way.
Sure. We all have our home bases, and I think it's important to get away and know the world outside your own space, but Lawrence has always been my home base.
You got your own public start, making your presence very much known as an artist in Lawrence in ways that were not always legal.
Looking around, I think that's slightly subjective.
Yeah.
These days, the definition of legal. Sure, when I was a teenager, I think there was a lot of wheat pasting, possibly. And when you're younger, you sort of want your voice out there a bit more, and you think you have a lot more to say than you probably do. I know as I've gotten older, I am more interested in listening and observing than I am being the speaker.
That's interesting because the style of your work now is very driven by color, at least to my eye, and a sense of nature overflowing. It's very botanical, and then with sort of like a little bit of, some images look a little more abstract, some look a little more flower and plant oriented, but they mostly walk a line between those things.
Right.
You're coming from a background where a lot of your images were these very tidy drawings with color in them and text.
Yes.
And it seems to me that moving to a place where you want to reflect and listen more than talk.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think my work now falls sort of in the realm of abstract landscape, which is a great mechanism for exploring my own inner landscape as well as our place here in the world. A lot of the work now deals with cycles of life and death as they exist in the interconnected systems between humans and the plant world. And what you're describing kind of with the color and line, I think of it as calligraphic paints and brush strokes, really. It's almost like the writing has turned into a more automatic response.
So it's like writing without words, writing in images.
It is, and it's a bit more free-flowing and less structured by a preconceived notion that was probably more prevalent in my younger work.
Like, this is what I'm going to depict. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to say.
Mm-hmm. And I create kind of masked borders in some of my work that suggest these structures that humans have built or artificial boundaries. And a lot of the color and free-flowing lines that are layered up in between there are the more free-flowing space as opposed to the more geographical structure in my work. So there is kind of that conversation of where we live and how we move through the growth and decay of the world around us, what our role is there.
Your current work is called Shared Biology. Can you talk about that title?
I've always been fascinated by systems and relationships. And my work over the years has migrated through a lot of different kind of autodidactic musings of sorts.
Autodidactic meaning self-taught.
I go through phases of just reading and studying a lot, and whatever I'm taking in is going to come out on the canvas, as I think that's the nature of artwork. It's my system of organizing information. And I went from doing a lot of studies on neurology and mapping of memory and how we view abstract works of art. And it started to become a bit narrow for me. And I started to look at our place, not just within ourselves, but in the larger landscape. Our role here as we are, our evolution and co-evolution with the plant world, with the environment around us.
When you talk about where we are here, you're talking about on this planet.
On this big rock.
Here.
And, you know, Earth. Where, and specifically where I am here in Kansas, I live in a place where we plowed under and developed the prairie in less than a generation. And now I'm going to this residency in Malaysia is struggling with its own crisis of loss of rainforest to palm plantation and loss of biodiversity and wildlife. Having a young daughter, it feels like it's no longer okay to just wonder what the future of the world will look like. It's imperative. I feel like it's a moral crisis. We're in the climate crisis. And you feel that when you're a parent much more heavily, that we need to have more of these cross-cultural conversations and understand that we are not in one single little spot in the world. We're connected to all the people around the world, and all of our actions are affecting each other.
When you go to work on this shared biology project, and you're going to be doing it in another country, on another continent, what are the big questions that are guiding you as you settle in there and think about the investigation you'll be doing, and then how that's going to translate onto canvas or paper?
It'll be a bit of both, canvas and paper. A lot of what we'll be doing is probably mostly sketching and observing. Frequently, my work happens after a residency, like the more important works. But I'm interested in the ecological efforts to sustain the rainforest that is there right now. And Malaysia has quite a sophisticated system in place for maintaining the rainforest that's there, but they're also losing in other areas quite a bit of biodiversity. So I'm interested to see, to have the conversations, I guess, about how people feel about that there. It's not something we talk about here in Kansas a whole lot, of loss of prairie. There are some people that do, but it will be interesting to see in these conversations with people there, how they feel that connection themselves to their own environment.
When you talk about the idea that climate change is a moral crisis and that you feel that acutely because you have a young daughter, I feel like that kind of rings in the name of this project, Shared Biology, because the ultimate shared biology really is genetics in some way,
it
you
is.
Know.
And as a single parent, I think constantly about what can I offer her and what can I do to make her life thrive in the future. And so, yeah, I think as an artist, we use artwork to make those connections too. And it's something I can share with her as well.
Well, Molly Murphy, thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you, Gina.
I can't wait to hear about it when you get back. Molly is an artist living in Lawrence. She's about to leave for an international residency to work on a series called Shared Biology. Our time is up, but you can enjoy either of this morning's conversations at kcur.org/centralstandard. They'll be ready for you by the end of the day. kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, if your hair is a crucial part of your identity, do the people who style it always seem to get the subtleties of why? People in a few different communities are trying to make sure that everyone has a place to go where the way they want their hair to look is respected. That story tomorrow at 10. This show is produced by Melody Rao, Coy Duggar, Chris Young, and intern Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman.